The last time we worked together, you had kind of recently turned 50, and you wrote a book called Second Wind.
Yes.
Now, that was a little over a decade ago. I'm just curious what wind we're on now.
Most men can't count that high, Mark. Thank you for that kind reminder of Ancient
Third,
of Days.
Fourth.
Mark Portis, everyone, here all week. Let's hear it for the guy. Don't forget the salad bar. All right, that is great. Well, hi, everybody. I see many came early to sit out as far away from me as you possibly can. Thank you. We have many seats up here that are empty. I do not spit when I speak, so you're welcome to join us at any time during the service, and that'll be just fine. I'm so glad to be here. This is amazing. You know, some of us are younger than we look, and some of us are older than we look, but interestingly enough, coincidentally, I came to Mount Hermon when I was 2, and I remember my parents bringing me here when I was 2, and they said, you need someone to look up to, and they found this little 6-year-old boy, Mike Romberger, and they said, you need to look up to that older boy, and it was really great, and we had a great time, and I remember you pointed us towards the teenager, Dave Burns, that was in the room at that time, and so it's funny how life will do that to you, but no, I was not here when I was 2, but I've been here for a long time, and I have been really looking forward to this. This has been great. We've had an unusual few days. Our family was actually here last week because I was invited to speak to the GEMS conference, the Japanese Evangelical Missionary Society, and with my rich Japanese heritage, they felt that I would fit right in, and so, by the way, that's why I'm wearing a hat. I wore it all week. There's not a lot of blonde Japanese people, and so I thought the hat would work. No, the reason I'm wearing the hat is we had a dozen of our family up here. We had 3 of our 5 children, and we had 5 of our 11 grandchildren up here, and then it's just too easy to stay over and do the second week, and so we went out to Denver this weekend to speak at a church where a pastor has up and left and needed help in, you know, healing the wounds. That was actually Romberger's former church, and they're a mess out there, folks. They're falling apart. It's, you can pray. I've never seen such a sadder sight, but anyway, so we were out in Denver yesterday, and all the family has left, including my wife. And as we were packing, I said, well, you know, I got to stay a week, and then I got to do another weekend. Let me pack what I think I need, and then you can take home what you think, what I think you need. So I was in charge of packing, which is why I'll be wearing this sweatshirt and this hat most of the week, because there are many things from hygienic items to clothing items that are now back in Orange County. And so don't look for me this afternoon. I'll be out shopping the sales at Kmart, all right? But we had a great week then, and I'm looking forward to a really wonderful week now. Mark, you're right. I mean, the last time we worked together, your oldest son was like train day, like jumping off the train because he was just like this tiny little 2-year-old. It's been a long time. You look great. What happened to me? Holy mackerel. So anyway, I can start reminiscing here, and we won't do anything at all that we're supposed to do, and I do want to do what I'm supposed to do to a certain degree. So what we're going to talk about this week, and I apologize that I was not there last night to wear the silly hat and tell you what we were going to do. I have a brand new book out, and so, gee, what do you think we're going to talk about? It's a subject that I've thought about for a long time, and I truly am excited about this, and it's become a real passion to me. The title of the book is Everyday Influence. And the premise of the book kind of goes like this. Years ago, I was in a graduate class on the topic of leadership, and one of the assignments was write with the smallest amount of words the definition of leadership. Be as concise as possible. And we thought we were really smart to come up with this definition, and it really is a good one because it's become a cliche, not that we started it, but I know you've heard this. Leadership is influence. And there's a lot of me that really likes that. You don't have to get real involved and deep to define leadership. Leadership is influencing other people. But what I don't like about that definition is if you erroneously conclude, based on that definition, that only leaders influence. And so the premise of this week is, if you are breathing, you have influence. If you have a pulse, you have influence. And granted, we have some amazing leaders that have influenced us. Political leaders, astronauts, Super Bowl winners. We have amazing celebrity-type influencers. But if I were to ask you one-on-one today, can you tell me the three or four people that have had the greatest influence on your life? More than likely, it would not be someone who is hounded by the paparazzi. It would be a parent, or it would be a teacher, or a coach, or a camp counselor, or a youth pastor, or a college professor, or one of your first bosses, or one of your coworkers. It would be somebody in your small circle that doesn't have a lot of popularity or fame outside your world, but they have marked you for life. And I want to be sure that you understand, this is not just some interesting topic that I thought would be fun to talk about and write about. I want you to know this is very much ingrained in all of Scripture, Old Testament and New Testament. We're going to look at both in our time together today. But those of you that know me, that have been in meetings with me before, you know that I love to kind of create an opening story to create kind of the metaphor or the symbol for what we want to do throughout our week. So indulge me as I tell you a little bit about my life. I live in Southern California now, but I was born and raised in Philadelphia. When you live in Philadelphia, as soon as you're old enough to leave, you leave. And so at 18, I left, and I decided to go. I felt God was calling me to the ministry, so I went to this little Bible college in Miami, Florida. It was a great college for me because I remember some of my dad's words during my senior year. Anybody that's my age might remember parents who used to say this sort of thing: you need to go to college. I hope you'll be able to afford it. And so I went to a college that was perfectly designed for people that were paying their own way, because all the classes were done by noon, so you could carry a part-time job in the afternoon or the evening or both, you know, in order to pay your school bill. And I had all kinds of crazy jobs when I was in Bible college. I remember I made sandwiches for 7-Eleven. I was moving 50-gallon oil drums out of boxcars in Miami. Think about that from the heat. It was like 130 degrees in those boxcars. I got out of that job as quick as I could. My favorite job, however, and I don't know any other words to describe it, I worked in a wallet factory, a factory that made wallets. Now, not leather, hand-sewn, Gucci, upscale. I'm talking vinyl, cheap, tourist trap, souvenir wallets, all right? Back way before even Disney World was at Orlando, the tourist traps were in Miami. It was places like Parrot Jungle and Monkey Jungle and the Miami Seaquarium. And they would pay our company to make these vinyl wallets. We didn't even sew them together. They had this machine they called a heat seal machine. And you would heat seal it together. And then the big kick was you would emblazon in fake gold the symbol of Monkey Jungle or Parrot Jungle or Miami Seaquarium. Sold them for about $3. You were guaranteed about 36 hours of enjoyment with this wallet before it started ripping open in the Miami heat. Okay? So I worked in what I felt like was the most boring of the steps, the first step. And what I did was I worked at a table with a huge machine that I'll explain to you in a minute that had this long, narrow table going all the way behind it. And I would say the table was probably about as wide as one of our aisles here. And it felt like it went all the way back to the end of the auditorium. It probably didn't go that far. But we would take these huge rolls of vinyl, and we would pull out a single sheet on this table till it got to the machine. And then we'd go back there, and with our blade cutter, we'd cut that piece of vinyl. And then we would pull another one out, cut that. We'd do that about 20 times. We'd get about 20 thicknesses of vinyl, staple it all together, and then we were ready to work with this machine. Now, the easiest way to explain this machine is up top were two red buttons conveniently positioned for your thumbs. When you press the red buttons, the machine worked. Under the two red buttons was the most distinguishing part of the machine, a huge steel slab. And then what you would do is you would place under the steel slab on top of the vinyl a die. And our die was a piece of wood in a rectangle, probably about the size of my book. And you would have a piece of wood, and surrounding the wood would be metal that would be sharpened on one side to be the blade. And the process was you would put the die on the vinyl, press the red buttons, the steel piece would come down and slam that die right into the vinyl, and then you would have 20 pieces of vinyl that looked just like your die. And we did this endlessly, over and over and over, just kept pulling the vinyl, and when you used it all up, bring out another 20 slices. It was just high intensity, high intelligence. It was minimum wage, you know, horrible, boring, but God is a gracious God. As bored as I was, he gave me a great gift, the man to my left and the man to my right. These two guys were like a comedy team. Izzy and Bart. Izzy and Bart. Izzy, just a wisp of a man. I don't think he even weighed 100 pounds. He had gray hair. He was getting very close to retirement. The most significant characteristic about Izzy is he wore false teeth. Or actually, I should say, he didn't wear false teeth. He kept his false teeth wrapped in wax paper in his pants pocket in case he ever needed them. Now, I mean no disrespect to the false teeth wearers in the sound of my voice, but you do have some quirks. And one of the quirks that I noticed is when you're not wearing your teeth, you constantly look like you're chewing on something. And I'm watching Izzy, and he's over there. He's just gumming nothingness. And I'm thinking, this is really crazy. And then, you know, that was Izzy. Now, to my right was Bart, Big Bart, the largest human I've ever met in my life. And I want to remind you, I have spoken to 26 of the NFL teams. I've seen some of the biggest guys in the world. They are dwarfed by Bart. He was 400 pounds if he was a pound. It was all in his middle section. My dear mother used to call that a beer gut. She didn't know how right she was. Bart, a bachelor, every night when the whistle blew at 5 o'clock, right down to the bar, drinking until it closed. I mean, it was just incredible. And Bart's comedy shtick was he kept trying to get Izzy to go with him after work. Come with me, Izzy. They didn't waste any time with the Bible college weenie. They figured, you know, that's too much fun. Bible college people don't want to have fun, after all. That's why they're in Bible college, to learn how to be sour. And so he'd work right over me. Come on, Izzy. Come on, Izzy. And finally, one day, he broke Izzy down, and Izzy went with Bart after work. Now, I don't know a lot about this subject, but I can tell you what. A 400-pounder can handle a lot more alcohol than a 100-pounder. I knew that. Bart knew that. Izzy did not know that. And Izzy tried to keep up with Bart. It was horrible. Bart got him home somehow. And I remember I didn't have class the next day, so I started right when they did, 8 o'clock. And Izzy was a mess. You talk about a guy who was wasted and three sheets to the wind and hungover and, you know, any word you want to say. He comes in, he's cross-eyed, his teeth are in the wrong pocket. He's a mess, all right? So the dear guy, he starts pulling out his vinyl sheets, and he gets about 20 sheets. He gets it stapled. All that works fine. But then he makes the fatal mistake. He takes his die to make the first cut, and he can see so little. He's so bleary-eyed. He puts the die down upside down, hits it with the two thumb. The steel plate comes down, wham, and doesn't make a cut at all. Actually, it destroys the nice, sharp, rectangular blade of the die. Izzy sees his mistake, and in his stupor, he decides, this is the fix. I'll just turn the die back over in its original intended position, and he starts hitting the two buttons. Well, now we're cutting through with a die that is not rectangular, but a die that he's making all these sheets. It was a horrible day, a very memorable day for me. By the way, it was the last day that Izzy was on that machine. He became director of janitorial services that day. But I remember thinking, man, that is crazy. Now, I'm not just reminiscing. I tell you that story for a reason. If you have a Bible, and by the way, if you do, bring it to the sessions. It would be really helpful. I want you to go start in the New Testament at 1 Peter, towards the end of the Bible. 1 Peter chapter 5. I want to show you biblical representation of Izzy and his die. 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 3. I know I'm in the middle of Peter's admonition, but for sake of time, let's just go right there. Not yet as lording over those allotted to your charge, but prove to be examples to the flock. If you underline and circle in your Bible, circle the word example. Be examples to the flock. Now, I want to teach you a little Greek here. I know a little Greek. He runs a deli down in Santa Cruz. And so if you can grab this Greek word, it'll be very helpful for the week, okay? Easy to remember. It rhymes with a word we're used to in our English language. The Greek word, for example, is tupon, T-U-P-O-N, English spelling. Tupon rhymes with coupon. Say that out loud for me, those of you that are awake. Tupon. Nudge the person sleeping next to you and say tupon, sleepyhead. Good. Ready? One, two, three. Tupon. That's brilliant. You guys are great. Greek scholars. The word tupon literally means to mark with a blow cast by a die, struck by a die. It is bam. It is that steel plate coming down and cutting through 20 sheets of vinyl with a tupon. You and I are all tupons. My wife, the home economics major from back in the days when they offered that, had a much easier to grab symbol. We are cookie cutters. Remember at Christmas time, you got the nice flat piece of uncooked dough. You take that cookie cutter, you push it through the dough, and now the dough looks like a star or an angel or a Christmas tree. You have marked that piece with the die. You and I are the die. We are tupons. Okay? And that is what God has called us to do, no matter what position we may have. Tupon is a very interesting word, by the way. Go over to another place where it has a completely different context. Go to John chapter 20. John chapter 20, look at verse 25, where we see one of the most famous disciples and where he got his nickname. Everybody's heard of Doubting Thomas, right? Doubting Thomas. Why did he get the nickname Doubting Thomas? Because of verse 25. The other disciples were saying, "We have seen the Lord." But Thomas said to them, "Unless I see in his hands the imprint of the nails and put my finger into the place of the nails and put my hand into his side, I will not believe." Unless I put my hand into the imprint in his hands. The word imprint is tupon. That unless I see the impact, the influence that the spear made in his side, the nails made in his hand, I will not believe. Same kind of idea. Look one more, 1 Thessalonians chapter 1. 1 Thessalonians chapter 1, where Paul is writing to encourage the Thessalonians to keep up the good work that they're doing. 1 Thessalonians chapter 1, verse 7, so that you became an example to all the believers in all Macedonia and Achaia. So you became a tupon. So work with me here. The word means in its purest form to make a mark, to strike a blow, to be a person who influences someone else. It would make sense to me, I hope it would make sense to you, that if the Bible, God's inspired word, is telling us to be examples to other people, then we ought to have as our goal to be a good example, not a bad example. Let's go even a little further. We should be a godly example, not an ungodly example. And as the week goes on, we want to unwrap that a little bit. I want to spend one day talking about how to move from what we naturally do, which I call natural influence, to supernatural influence, where you basically just let God go to work in your life to impact other people. Influence isn't new. I realize that. It's a word I've grabbed onto that I really like. I think it's very, very similar, if not completely synonymous, to what the New Testament teaches and we call discipleship. I want people to see in me a life that they want to replicate. Okay? So influence is very significant. Now, let me assume, because I see all your bright, smiling faces, and I know so many of you, you're a wonderful group of people, and so you're already on board. Give it to me, blonde boy. I want to be an influencer for the good, for the godly, for the supernatural. Okay, good. Then, I need to ask the question. In its simplest form, what does the Bible teach about influence? How can I very practically start to apply what influence looks like? Man, I'm so glad you asked. Now we're going to go back to the Old Testament, to one of the most classic passages in the Old Testament, Deuteronomy chapter 6, fifth book of the Bible. Deuteronomy, duo, two, nomos, law, second giving of the law. Deuteronomy chapter 6. There's a great, great passage that our Jewish friends read aloud all the time. They love this passage, and if you've never seen it before, you'll quickly see why they embrace it. Beginning, the paragraph begins in verse 4. Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might. And these words which I am commanding you today shall be on your heart. Now, the next verse, verse 7, is the one we're going to unpack a little bit. And you shall teach them diligently to your sons, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. The last part first. Moses is saying, whatever this influence is going to look like, it happens in every aspect of life. In the house, outside the house, early in the morning, late at night. We'll talk about this later in the week too, the whole consistency of influence. You just can't pick and choose. I'm a morning influence kind of guy. Don't get me at night, I'm just ugly. Well, no, God doesn't. Oh, well, I understand, you're a morning person. Yeah, you impact people negatively all night if you'd like. No, God doesn't give you an excused absence on that. He's saying, look, we're trying to do it consistently throughout our whole life. One other word about this before we get right into what it's teaching. I understand that the primary audience of Deuteronomy 6 is parents. This is what you teach to your kids. So, if you are here this morning and you are a parent, you don't need to go any further than that when we talk about influence. How to influence your kids. And I make a point about that, not only so that you see it's the primary audience, but also if you happen to be at my stage of life, where my kids are all adults, they're all grown, they've all moved out, they're giving me grandkids, it's a beautiful thing. Don't start saying, you know, this is good stuff, I wish I knew this back when my kids were little and were at home, because I missed my window. No, you didn't. You just got a different window that you're climbing in now, all right? And so don't buy the myth that, you know, I only had my one shot with the kids. It's too late. And that's why it's all messed up now, because I missed my shot. I know what that feels like, so I'm going to talk about that through the week personally, about, you know what, it's never too late. Now, if you are here and you're not a parent, don't take this as a cue for, oh boy, it's a parenting thing. I'm out of here. I'm getting a triple latte with caramel on the top with whipped cream and a banana. You're not off the hook on this either, okay? Because influence is your immediate circle. Okay, so you don't have kids. You've got neighbors, you've got coworkers, you've got your small group, you've got your accountability group, you've got the guys you work out with, you've got the running club, you have all this circle of influence. Don't naively think this is only talking about people that have kids. Okay? This is for all of us. And what Moses is saying, inspired by God, is wrapped up for today's teaching under this sentence, you shall teach them diligently to your sons and shall talk of them when you sit. Okay? Teach and talk. You can circle those two words in your Bible as well. First time I read this, I thought this was Moses simply being redundant, making very sure that you and I understand it's very important to verbally communicate what is significant in your life to your children. In this passage, he's saying they need to know that we have an awesome God and we should love him with all our heart, our soul, and our mind. Communicate that verbally. And that is in this, but it's not a case of being redundant. The word teach is very different from the word talk, okay? So if you're a note taker, you're highly frustrated at this point. You have no idea what to write down. I'm not giving points to the message. It's like, where did this guy come from? You know, he's a mess. So in order to make that up to you, let me give you 2 points at the same time, okay? And violate all the rules of speech and homiletics. I'm going to give you 2 points at the same time so that you end up, you know, stop having your hissy fit about I've got nothing to write down with this guy. You know, some guy asked me right away, do you have PowerPoint and fill in the blanks? I said, no, and you just see his face drop. Like, yeah, you're going to actually have to pay attention, you know, and write this thing down, you know. So if you're still here, this is the point, guy. Wake up. I got something for you to write down, all right? Here's point number one, okay? Influence occurs when I take time to talk. Influence occurs when I take time to talk. Okay? But I'm going to give you point two as well, because the symbol I want you to think of is a coin. That influence is a coin, and it's got two sides. One side of the coin is point one. Influence occurs when I take time to talk. Other side of the coin, point two, influence occurs not only by my words, but by my actions. Influence occurs not only by my words, but by my actions. Okay? Now, to make it more confusing, let me talk about both points at the same time. Teaching, point number one, occurs when I talk. The word, the Hebrew word for teach is the more formal of the two words between teach and talk. Teach is talking about what you and I are thinking about, conversations with those that are important. I mean, the Hebrew term actually is almost more pedagogic, almost like a classroom situation, where you are taking time to say to those in your circle, your children or whoever we're talking about, these are the things that are really significant to me, okay? Now, think about your parents for a second. And if you were fortunate enough to have, you know, an occasional meal where the whole family was together. I believe that all of us are wired towards one side or the other. We're either more words kind of people or we're more actions kind of people. And the problem is because we're wired that way, we kind of think we're off the hook on the other one. But we're not. If you are more of a words person, we need to talk to you in a few minutes about your actions. And if you're more of an actions person, we need to talk to you about your words. So some of us were blessed enough to have moms and dads that would say things like, we have some very important things to discuss at dinner. Bring a pad and pen because I'm going to want you to write these things down. And there will be a test before we give dessert. You know, and you can update that to today. You know, there's a PowerPoint presentation today at the dinner table. We're going to fill in the blanks, and you're going to get that. Some of us were very blessed to have the more teaching type of an adult. And I'm sure there are people in this room that are wired that way. I just constantly see let me tell you a little bit more about what you have to look forward to in life, my son, my grandson, my daughter. You know, you got all this stuff that you're doing, okay? That's teach. First point. Second, the word talk really throws us a curve in the Hebrew because it's not talking about words. If I were to give it a 2015 spin, talk is actually referring to doing life together. Let's do life together. My favorite way to describe it would be the parent on this side that says there's going to be a presentation during dinner that will communicate some things that are very important in life versus this parent who says, I wouldn't know what to say if I had to make a presentation, but if you help me clear the table and load the dishwasher and get everything cleaned up, let's go out and shoot hoops until it gets dark. That's the other side. Many of you know I'm a ghostwriter as well. I write books for other people, thus the chalky complexion. But I had I had an assignment a couple years ago where I was writing for a guy, and he wanted me to go out and interview men. And one of the questions he wanted me to ask men was, what was the best day you ever had with your dad? Best day. And so I asked all these men, and it became very apparent there was a very common answer. If you ever play Family Feud and you want the Butterworth answer, this is how it works. These guys, most common answer, best day I ever had with my life, with my dad in my life, the day he took me to a ball game. You can opt out for fishing or hunting. One-on-one, my dad at the ball game. And I heard this so much, and I asked a few questions, that I started to get the rhythm of this. So I would kind of egg them on a little bit as I interviewed more, and they'd say, the day I went to a ball game with my dad. And I would say with my tongue in my cheek, I bet you had some amazing conversations that day. And they'd look at me like, what? Conversations? We barely spoke. I said, you're kidding me. You sat with your dad through 9 innings and you didn't say what? Well, there was that one time. Oh, you tell me about it. Yeah, the ump made a bad call. He stood up. He said words I had never heard him say before. You know, and then he, you know, sat back down and we watched the rest of the game. And that was the best day you ever had with your dad. Absolutely, bar none. I don't have research on this. This is just me, you know, speaking. But my observation is, in 2015, more of us are wired on this side of the coin. We are more wired on let's share life together. Christians also have the erroneous thought of, well, if they need to learn something important, that's why I take them to church. We get the pastors to teach them. I mean, I put money in the offering plate. We're paying them to do this. Teach my kids, and I'll pick them up, and then we'll go watch the game after church. And again, I want to reiterate, God is not saying it's multiple choice, pick A or B. He's saying you need to do both. If you're wired this way, you need to work harder at that way. By the way, it's interesting to contrast this historically. Over 200 years ago, for example, here, this is a familiar story to some of you. James Boswell, the biographer of Samuel Johnson, who many people say that's the most incredible, the best biography ever written in the English language. Boswell would constantly talk about his best day with his dad. And it was a fishing trip. The day my dad took me fishing. The day my dad took me fishing. And finally, not finally, like we were waiting for it, but at some point, Boswell's father passed away. And some of his friends got access to Boswell's father's journal. And they wanted to know, well, what did his dad think about this amazing day? And they found the date, and they found a very short journal entry that day. Took my son fishing, a day wasted. A day wasted. 200 years ago, it was like, why would I do that with my son? We've got to be quiet so we don't disturb the fish. I should be over here saying, you're growing up, you're going to be a man. These are things that are important that you must learn, that you must do. It was far more important to be wired on this side back then than it was on let's do life together. So culturally, we kind of hit the pendulum swing, but it doesn't matter which one we are. Both of them are important. So we need to teach our kids, and we need to share life with our kids. In 1980, having met 5 years before one of the most influential guys I've ever had in my life, Chuck Swindoll, Chuck hired me and moved the whole family to Southern California to go to work at Insight for Living. And I remember we were living in Fullerton, and I was going to work Monday through Friday at a ministry, as a minister, and with all my little kids, all the little 5 kids at home. I remember being constantly obsessed with the fact that I want my kids to believe that ministry can be enjoyable, that it can be fun. Too many people think pastors are the most sour, you know, critical, harsh, sad, weepy little people. And I want my kids to know that ministry can be fun. So one fall at Insight for Living, somebody came up with an idea, just to kind of boost the morale, that we create at IFL an NFL football poll. And it was very simple. There were no point spreads. There was no money. It was not a fantasy thing. Every Tuesday, you were just given the list of all the games for the following weekend. You just circled which team you thought would win. Vikings are playing the Jets. I think the Jets will win. You know, we did this whole thing, and then we counted it up through the entire season, and the person who won the most games was declared the winner and was given the prize of being known as the winner. Okay, it was very low-key. But I'm a huge NFL fan, so I was so excited, and I was coming home every night thinking, this is how to get my kids excited. They'll see all the fun we're having. I was coming home every night, yeah. And finally, my kids got so tired of hearing about this, they wigged out at dinner. Whoa, stop, we're tired of hearing about that football poll at work. And I'm like, whoa, what's the matter? We're tired of hearing about all the fun you have at work, and you're not having any fun back home with us. Whoa. I said, well, what do you want me to do? We want a family football poll. And my oldest was like 9. I'm like, okay, if that's what you want, that's what we'll do. And so we started picking the teams. You know, I remember my daughter picked the teams based on the colors of the uniforms. She won that year. It was horribly embarrassing. And the kids were loving it. It was just the coolest thing in all the world to do. And I'll tell you, the smartest thing I ever did is I went to the trophy store and I bought a perpetual plaque. And up at the top, I said, Butterworth Family Football Poll. And then every time you won, you got your name on one of those little steel or bronze plates. I've expanded that perpetual trophy 3 times now. Kids are doing it with their spouses. I've got grandkids doing it. I have a granddaughter who picks the teams based on the colors of the uniforms. Now, I can't show you a verse that says, thou shalt have an NFL football poll in thy house. And you don't have to. But you need to do something to show the people you're influencing that you're willing to share life with them and you can be fun. I'm very passionate about the football poll because I need to say one other thing. I went through a stage in life, many of you will identify, where one of my 4 sons reached a stage where he announced, I just don't want to talk to you anymore, so I'm not. I have nothing to say to you. I'm going off to college. See ya. Which is heartbreaking. And I remember feeling so sad that I had no connection with my son. And then fall came, and he had to call me every week to give me his picks. And in just that 3-minute phone call, it was golden. Any of you have ever been estranged with one of your family members, you know how special a little phone call like that can be. You can do whatever you want. Again, I'm just trying to offer some suggestions. But the 2 sides of the coin are that we are people who understand influencers influenced by their words and influenced not only by their words, but by their actions as well. Let me give you one final thought to think about. I'll tell you a story and I'll sit down. Influence arrives in the simplest of ways. Influence arrives in the simplest of ways. I would like to suggest to you that you and I are influencing people and we don't even realize it, and the influence is awesome. Think back to some of the people that influence you in your life. You oftentimes will say, oh, well, I thought about your question, blonde boy, and I have an answer. It was a teacher who da-da-da, or it was my mother who said da-da-da-da-da. And in the midst of you telling me this story, you will say something like, and you know, I don't even think they ever even realized it. That's arriving in the simplest of ways. Growing up in Philadelphia in the 50s and the 60s, my dad was a good, solid, blue-collar worker. If you ever played Monopoly, my dad worked on one of the railroads on the Monopoly board, the Reading Railroad. I was 8 years old. It was Thanksgiving Day. I can still remember it. My mother was checking to make sure my winter coat was zipped up completely because it was an early, cold day in that November. And I remember I can still see her finger wagging at me. She would say, Billy, you know the railroad runs 365 days a year. I'd say, yes, Mommy. And today's Thanksgiving. I know that, Mommy. It's a very special Thanksgiving today. I said, why is that, Mommy? Because your dad has finally gained enough seniority on the railroad that if he works Thanksgiving, he can be off on Christmas Day. And so Dad's going to work today at Thanksgiving, but he's going to be off on Christmas. I said, okay, Mommy. And then she said the big news. And Daddy wants you to come to work with him. I went nuts. Oh my gosh, I get to go to work with Daddy. I jumped into the passenger side of that 57 Ford with the bench seat across. And man, we drove down to Center City, Philly. We took a hard left. We're over by the Delaware River to the dirtiest, sootiest, grimiest, slimiest freight yard you could ever imagine. I walked the tracks with my dad, and then he said, we got to go over to the office, and went to the office. It was this two-story red brick building that was probably 100 years old back then, and he took me to the top, to the second floor, to this little office that had one giant desk in the middle and a little student desk over to the side. And my dad, kind of a man of few words, and as I think back to this story, I think at this point, Dad even forgot that I was with him, because he went right to his desk and he started filling out all the paperwork that he needed to do based on what he had seen as he walked the tracks. And I remember standing in the doorway with my winter coat on thinking, well, this is going to be a long day if this is how this is going to go down. And he finally saw me and he said, oh, and he motioned me over to the student desk. And I remember he pulled the chair out and he let me sit down and he put it in. And right in the center of the student desk was a machine I had never seen in person before. Saw it in pictures, saw it on TV, but I had never actually had personal exposure to it. Some of you are going to have to ask your grandparents to explain this to you. It was a typewriter. A typewriter. An Underwood manual typewriter. And Dad put me in there. He took a fresh piece of white paper and he rolled that baby into that deal. And he said the four simplest words that changed my life. He said, he pointed to the machine. He said, you might like this. You might like this. He had no idea. I was immediately enthralled with how the typewriter worked. I decided I was going to do letters as my typing. Dear Mommy, I am at work with Daddy. I am typing on a typewriter. I am having fun. Love, Billy. Then I decided, well, let's branch out. I got friends all over the neighborhood. Dear Johnny, I live next door to you, but I am at work with my daddy right now. I'm typing on a typewriter. Talk to you later. I didn't do love, Billy, but your friend, Billy. Letter after letter. I was working my way through the 30 kids in my third grade class, and my dad said, come on, it's time to go. And it was like, you're kidding. We worked through the whole day. I didn't even realize I was so mesmerized by this typewriter. And my dad's four words, you might like this, he had no idea. So a few months ago, I'm working on this book, which is my 14th book. And I'm typing up this story on the great-great-grandson of the Underwood manual, the laptop. And I'm working on this keyboard, and I get to the phrase, you might like this. And I think, Dad, you had no idea the impact you had on me when you introduced me to that machine. Supernatural influence. It had to be. It was just incredible. You and I have the same opportunities daily with the people that are in our lives. If you stick with me every morning, we're going to unwrap this even more and learn more about how to be a person of everyday influence. Let's pray. Lord, thank you for the subject of everyday influence. Thanks for being the God of influence, that we can look to you for a holy example, a holy tupon of what it really means to be a person of godly influence. I pray for this week that you would just work in the life of each and every person that hears these words. Because I know, Lord, there are some of us who find this kind of topic second nature. We are just by nature very strong influencers. But then there are others of us who are working through so much stuff in our lives. There's brokenness, there's despair, there's depression, there's anxiety. And it's like, I don't have time to do something like this. I don't even have my own life together. I pray that you would just extend an extra measure of grace to those folks who are wrestling with some mighty issues at this point in their life. Thank you, Lord, for letting us be together at this wonderful, wonderful place. Continue to give us a great week. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.